I find it so Love strange, but I guess according to some people, it is a fulfillment of destiny or some people claim that it's kind of the Bible. But there's no other people will scoff at that type of talk. But, you know, there's no doubt that that the Jews have paid an extraordinary price for their beliefs or culture over the years. Nobody would argue with that. Okay, and so getting you to some of the headlines, there is a lot of controversy over what's going on with Iran and the United States, and especially there was a letter that was sent out that you're probably aware of, that was put out by Cotton, Senator Cotton from Arkansas, warning Iran that we can change the details of any agreement between Iran and the United States as soon as Obama leaves. And really, even before that, we've got some weather news. Boston, snowiest winter on record. If you can imagine that, and once again, that is a little possibly difficult information for global warming folks to challenge. And this is from Yahoo News. The Associated Press and Yahoo News reporting 107 inches. It's been broken. And it's the snowiest and probably most miserable season since 1872. Official measurements of 108.6 inches at Logan International Airport on Sunday night bettered the record of 107.6 set in 95-96. And that's according to National Weather Service. Super Bowls, World Series, and snowfall records, Mayor Martin J. Walsh tweeted. We are truly a tidal city. The final 2.9 inches came after a record-setting monthly snowfall of 64.9, about 65 inches. So, and the closest previous month to that was 43 inches. So they must be really, really just suffering out there. Benjamin Netanyahu is on the verge, they say, of not losing his job as prime minister, but they say that he made a poor decision when it came to asking for another vote, a vote of confidence or whatever. He asked for it earlier than he needed to, and so they are now in trouble, and they say that there is some evidence that the United States government was involved in putting out some this is kind of hard to believe, but putting out some of the, I guess they put in a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of advertising against Netanyahu. I take it that the president doesn't really like Benjamin Netanyahu, that he showed up and gave the speech that the president didn't approve of. And now it's come out that he has put out this supposedly connected to some pay that was out there. So anyway, let's take a little break here. And I've got, I don't think I played Chet Atkins yet. I forgot to keep track of everything. It doesn't matter if we played 2 days of Chet Atkins. He's a very, very important guitar player in the history of Nashville, but got a little bit of him, a famous song by him called Mr. Sandman for you here, and we'll come back and pick up some of the stories. 523-1450 to call in. I believe that Keith is not here. I don't think. I think his show ended. I think maybe I'm maybe it's on the, yeah, I think Keith's show ended, so I don't think he's going to be coming on after this. But so we will miss Keith. And I'm getting this puppy here to play, which appears to be a little bit stuck here. Anyway, I think that we're done with winter here, and we're going to be obviously we're moving into spring already, and so it's allergy season, and I can feel it myself. Here's Mr. Chet Atkins, Mr. Sandman TV 1954 live, and Chet Atkins was very instrumental, no pun intended, but he was a very influential player. He influenced country players, of course, but he also influenced rock and rollers like Mark Knopfler, and also jazz guitar players like Earl Klugh and George Benson. So, I think I did play him, but it's okay. Here's a little bit, Mr. Sandman. So we'll play him again today. 523-1450 to call in. Working through some of the great names in the history of country music this month, Kelly O'Connell Show. And we'll be right back. Connell here, and good morning to you. It is 6:17, and this show is now sponsored by Ross and Builder Supply, and Ben Rossin is coming in every week, and he's giving an update on the county. Ben Rossin has a business in town, Rossin's Builder Supply, but also they have he's a member of the county commission, and we're grateful for his support. And we've got some other I think we've got some other sponsorships in the wings, so I'll announce those when they come out. Here's a little bit on the Aggies, though.
Welcome to 68 and 60, presented by John Deere. Nothing runs like a deer. The 15th seed, New Mexico State, the Aggies. Offensive execution, the X factor for these guys. Four guys average double figures on this unit. Remy Berry leads the way at 13 points per game. 6'8", stretch four, can shoot the three, can do a little bit of everything as he goes, as does this team. Key stat you need to know. When picking your brackets, you want a team that's playing their best basketball late. Well, how about this team? They haven't lost since January 17th at Seattle, playing great basketball on a great run right now. Maybe that continues into the tournament. Well, if you're a big believer in miracles, then you have them beating Kansas in 2 seed. I do not. They lose in the first round to Rock Shot. It's a great season for these guys, but it comes to an end with a tough matchup against Kansas. Kansas is going to blow them out of the water. 68 and 60 coming to you hot here from campusinsiders.com.
All right, so it's exciting. I mean, it would be sad if we didn't have some team that was pretty good. The football team has struggled over the years, but didn't do too bad last year. Started off pretty strong. Started with a growl and ended with a whimper, as they say. All right, some other stories, headlines for you. Doctor delivers baby over FaceTime. Isn't that touching? Hertz putting cameras in rental cars, although it doesn't plan to use them. That sounds a little strange, doesn't it? Suspected shooter of two police officers in custody. He's a 20-year-old. according to the reports. And see if I can get a little clip of that one here for you. And I would be very interested in what they'll be able to tell us about these guys, these shooters, and what their motivation was. Obviously, some level of racism or racial payback, I guess you would say. And, you know.
Hi, I'm Tony Genos.
Kind of, and I'm Tina Genos with Aphrodite Granite.
Come visit us, and we will guarantee your installation. And
if it was the just the reaction of a couple of young men who were kind of reacting to the media cycle, really, that's how I see it. That, I mean, there are people that get shot by the police all of the time, and not all, you know, it's not always claimed to be a racial incident. So, although it is a sad story with Brown. Brown, this young man claiming to, or a lot of people claiming that he was shot unfairly. I've got a clip here for you if I can get it to play.
Police officers in Ferguson.
The suspect is behind bars tonight in a story first reported online by Fox 2. Jeff Bernthal joins us live from Clayton with questions about the motive for the shooting. Jeff.
Shirley and Elliot, that suspect jailed here tonight at the St. Louis County Justice Center on a $300,000 cash-only bond. Prosecutor Bob McCullough says if that suspect is convicted, he could face life in prison. Police say it was help from the public that led to the arrest. Jeffrey Williams charged with two counts each of first-degree assaults and armed criminal action, and one count of shooting a firearm from a motor vehicle. The wounded officers have since been released from the hospital. Police say they recovered a .40-caliber handgun and matched it to shell casings found at the scene.
The evidence developed at this point, and in part on his statement, that he may have had a dispute with some other individuals or felt some dispute. We're not sure we completely buy that part of it, but in any event, it's possible he was firing at some other people, and the officers, of course, were in the back.
Bishop Derek Robinson, a regular protester, says he met his arrest and says Williams had been robbed and was randomly firing shots into the air.
And he was, I believe, frustrated and upset about what had happened. And he said he did not try to shoot at anyone. It was an air shot.
McCullough said Williams had been part of protests in the past and had been protesting outside the Ferguson Police Department earlier that night. Robinson disagrees.
The protests had nothing to do with it. Because that's not what we're doing.
Investigators are still poring over cell phone video from the scene and say it's possible more arrests could be made.
A lot of things that still have to be checked out, you know, from previous investigations that we compare what information we have from people to the physical evidence that's there. Some of that matches up. At this point, some of it does not, and that's still going to go on. But enough right now to file these charges.
Now, McCullough says Williams had been on probation for receiving stolen goods. McCullough believed that he had violated that probation by not reporting to his probation officer. Tonight, Robinson told me that Williams told him he was beaten after he was handcuffed. St. Louis County police say Williams was taken into custody without incident. Reporting live from Clayton, Jeff Bernthal, Fox 2 News.
Well, I mean, if you believe that, I've got some little bit of swampland to sell you. That is absolutely bizarre. The guy happened to be at a protest, had just been robbed, and then shot his gun in the air just as this, police chief's information was, you know, he'd resigned and all these protests over Ferguson. I don't believe that for a second. There's got to be more of a story here. All right, more headlines for you. Related to this, a lieutenant governor there says Holder incited the mob many times. So as Holder is leaving, people are saying that he is implicit in racism. He's implicit in driving the mob. He's been implicated in some people's minds in being a racial divider. So I guess historians will decide in the future what kind of a Justice Department that he ran. 523-1450 to call in. there is a study that has come out. Sleeping cuts the risk of diabetes. And actually, if you're trying to lose weight, by the way, one of the ways that you can do that is by making sure that you get a good night's sleep. You actually lose after a good sleep, and that's part of the sleep cycle. And actually, you know, if you're having a problem with your weight, studies have shown that if you get 4, 5, 6 hours a night regularly, that is one of the big causes for gaining weight. So you might want to look into that. They've got Elton John going to war with Dolce and Gabbana, the designers, who are themselves in a giant lawsuit right now with the government, are getting prosecuted in Italy for tax evasion. But anyway, Elton John has a baby that he had with his partner, and obviously Elton John has a male partner, and Dolce and Gabbana had said that it was a synthetic baby and that you should not have babies outside of marriage like that. And they said it was either Dolce or Gabbana said that it was a very cruel thing to deny a child their mother. So Elton John is now asking for a obviously that didn't sit well with Elton John, so he's asked for a that people would not buy Dolce and Gabbana, who have bigger problems on their plate right now. All right, so let us take let's hear a little more Chet Atkins here. I should really play for you a little bit of Jerry Reed. He's also an incredible guitar player. He did the thing from Smokey and the Bandit. He wrote a song for that, and what an incredible player. One of the great all-time players in the history of Nashville was Jerry Reed. And I'm looking for a little song here for you and him. But he was also in that movie, the movie with Burt Reynolds. And let's take a little break here, and I'll get you some Jerry Reed when we come back. 523-1450 to call in. It is 627, and we're going to get into a little bit of state and local news.
For your father, the world was one big adventure after another, just waiting to be discovered. He saw the world in such a beautiful light.
Kelly here, and saw something interesting last night. It's in the media, but I watched some film footage of this gentleman, Durst, Robert Durst, who he was this multimillionaire. He's the son of a very prominent developer in New York City, and he was kind of the black sheep of the family there. The family's worth billions. His brother is worth something like $700 or $800 million. His brother was somehow involved in the rebuilding of the Twin Tower, the Tower One that they are building to replace the Twin Towers that came down. Anyway, this guy was implicated in at least 3 different murders, and the most incredible thing that I found out when I was watching this story about this guy, he had killed his neighbor. He had killed his neighbor and cut him up and put him in bags and threw him. And I think this is when he was living down in Texas. Put put the body in bags and threw it in the, I don't know if it was in the ocean or if it was in a lake anyway. They found the bags implicated the brother. And then when he was prosecuted. And anyway, he actually admitted killing the guy and cutting him up, but he said that he did it in self-defense and that he panicked when he killed this guy and in self-defense and cut him up. And the jury let him off. The jury bought this story, although they did send him to jail or prison, I think, for 5 years for tampering with evidence. And, you know, if cutting up a body is anything, it's at least tampering with evidence, isn't it? So this guy is a very, very strange guy, and he admits that he's antisocial. His first wife was murdered. His girlfriend was then murdered, and when the police were coming to talk to her about the first murder, and then his next door neighbor. So they're going after him for killing the girlfriend. It's very very weird. The guy's got a very strange personality. He just comes across as creepy, to say the least. All right, so some more headlines here for you. Vladimir Putin is not dead. You'll be happy to find out that he's come out of his burrow. John Voight, Obama does not love Israel. That's really gotten under people's skin, those statements. And I've got a clip of that for you if you like. John Voight, obviously one of the great actors of his generation. I think he won an Oscar for Midnight Cowboy. But claiming in a new ad he's backing Bibi Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, and claiming the president does not love Israel. It's obvious that the president does not love Bibi Netanyahu. Do we also draw the conclusion that he does not like? Many people have claimed that the president is a critic of Israel. And as you recall, he wanted Israel to go back to the 1967 borders, which would have left Israel, I think, 50 or 60 miles wide and almost unable to defend itself, according to some. Anyway, here's John Voight talking about this.
John Voight, I love Israel. I want to see Israel survive and not be overtaken by the madmen of this world. President Obama does not love Israel. His whole agenda is to control Israel, and in this way, he can be friends with all of Israel's enemies. He doesn't want Bibi Netanyahu to win this upcoming election. America has not been the same since his presidency. I beg everyone, all of you, to understand the truth. Those like Yitzhak Herzog, who believe that deal-making is the solution to what Israel faces, are as wrong as Neville Chamberlain, believing he made a peace deal with Hitler. We must learn from history where the true danger lies. I pray to God to keep Israel safe and America as well. Much love to you.
Obviously destined to be a very controversial video, and John Voight became an evangelical Christian over the last few decades, and has stood up for 523-1450 if you have an opinion on this. One of the interesting things about this debate is it is really at some level driven by the evangelical community in America, who see the promises in the Bible for Israel as relating to the moderns. And I'll have another another clip from him coming up here, but it is kind of fascinating to see the kind of this fundamental debate between people who are very secular in the United States, who really have gotten sick of the amount of support that we've given to Israel over the years, and between the evangelicals who hold it as an element of their faith that Israel must be protected in all circumstances. Now, putting that aside, we do have one ally in the Middle East, and that's Israel, who has a functional economy that is not just based on oil, that is a military presence over there, although we may have built their military. That's neither here nor there, though. They are our ally and the one state that we can depend on. And it goes without saying that if the United States had not been backing Israel over the years, that there's probably a pretty good chance that they would have been, at least if not attacked more than they have been, and they've been attacked 4, 5, or 10 times in various wars, the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War, the war that was started the day that they came into existence, as you recall, that they would probably have been wiped out at some point. Here's Jerry Reed, When You're Hot, You're Hot. Classic country. 523-1450. It is 6:37 on the Kelly O'Connell Show, AM 1450 KOBE, and we'll be right back. Have a little weather coming for you. This is going to play here in just a second. I think I have too many windows open on my computer. But also, we've got this debate going on with Iran that we want to touch on, too, in which the people on the far right in the Senate are flexing the muscles, newfound muscles in the Senate, to try to push back against the press. Here's Jerry Reed, though. It's 6:38, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 to call in.
Well, now me and Homer Jones and Big John Talley had a big crap game going back in the alley. And I kept rolling them seven and winning all them pods. My luck was so good, I could do no wrong. I just kept on rolling and controlling them balls. Finally, they just threw up their hand and said, "When you're hot, you're hot." I said, "Yeah. When you're hot, you're hot. And when you're not, you're not." Put out all the money in and let it roll for you. When you're hot, you're hot.
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Kathy Kelly.
Hey,
gosh,
what's going on? How's it going?
Pretty good. I'm gonna miss that show after yours, Keith's show.
Yeah. That
is tragic.
Yeah, no doubt. I like Keith. You know, he's a nice guy, and I think that the community gained something from having that show.
Yeah, you know, last I heard, they were talking about hummingbirds, but I can understand why conservatives find hummingbirds threatening and pull a moderate liberal. I mean, the people that own that radio station are conservatives, just like the people that run the theater in town. You know, the most big business people are conservative, and they can't even stand a liberal speaking on their radio.
Kathy, that has actually had nothing to do with it. I can tell you from the inside that... Let's bring it on the air. Hey, it's Kelly here, and I've got Kathy on the line, and Kathy is bemoaning the demise of Keith's show. And Kathy, you were saying that you felt like they got rid of Keith's show because of the fact that he wasn't conservative enough.
Yeah, I do. That's what I believe. Talk radio in this town, people that run the theaters, the people that run big business, they're all conservatives. And they can't even listen to a liberal speak or even a moderate liberal. I don't think Keith was extremely liberal. It's too bad. It was an interesting show for older people, I guess, because they talked a lot about, hummingbirds and gardening. But, it was a good show. And I can't imagine. I imagine we'll get Rush Limbaugh extended onto that hour or something like that.
I think
wonderful.
I think it's going to be, my understanding was that it was going to be, what's his name, Glenn Beck.
He's not very conservative, is he?
Well, I mean, it is for better or worse the nature of talk radio to be conservative. Let me ask you something. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I get the money. There was a show I used to watch called Stephanie Talking Liberally, and it was on of course, the channel on television that is now Al Jazeera. But that was a good show. Don't you want to hear the other side? The conservatives just want to pat each other on the back and say, yeah, we're right. Let's not even listen to what the liberals have to say. But that's okay. I mean, the reason I listen to your show is so I can get a perspective on the other side. I don't feel I'm an extreme liberal. I kind of take a little bit of both sides and try to balance it out, and Keith helped do that.
Isn't being a little bit liberal like being a little bit pregnant, Kathy?
No, Kelly, it's not.
Well,
I just don't believe that. I mean, I'm really somebody that's liberal about the environment, but you know what? Don't try to take my gun from me. I grew up with guns, and I don't like that type of legislation. So, I mean, I take a little bit out of each party. I try to give and take, listen to people's views, and balance it out. And I think Keith kind of helped with that. And it's tragic that you're station has done away with his show.
Well,
an hour would have been good, just to keep it an hour.
I told Keith that he was welcome to come on my show anytime that he wanted, and I was kind of thinking about what we could do to maybe make up some of the the broadcasting that he did, maybe try to get some of the type of, you know, nobody wants this show probably who's listening to become more liberal, but we could try to cover some of the stuff that he was covering, kind of sop it up a little bit. But I like
inject Keith. A little liberalism into your show with Keith and stir the pot, as you say, and kind of get a lot more. You get, if you brought Keith on as a co-host or something, or even visiting on a regular basis, you'd probably light a fire under some of those conservatives, get them calling in more and get liberals listening a little more. If Keith was there, mix it up with the liberals and the conservatives all on one show and see how it goes.
Well, I mean, that
might be interesting.
That would make the show more liberal. I never say to myself when I'm looking at a story, this is liberal, I'm not going to play it. That never occurs to me. But I mean, I'm all in favor in doing the fair and balanced thing. I think that there was
Fox, Fair and Balanced.
Well, that's a little tongue in cheek there, but I don't actually watch Fox News. But I just got cable and I can't figure out how to turn it on. I'm going to have to call the cable company. But anyway, things are so complicated these days. But I have a liberal arts background. I love art and I love all these different things that are traditionally associated with liberalism. But I would bring on any topic that Keith would have brought on. I might kind of look at it a little bit differently, but some people thought that there was a little too much NPR in Keith's show. So I don't know. I mean, I like Keith, so I'm a little bit biased.
I liked him, too. It was a good show. It was interesting. I mean, I don't understand why hummingbirds and gardening and stuff like that. Of course, when he starts talking about the Oregon Mountain thing, and that just riles all the conservatives. So I can understand that. But tell Keith that I enjoyed his show. Love to hear him on your show. I think that would be a benefit. I truly do. So.
Well, yeah, and I thought it was unfair to send him to Syria, but I understand what, you know. No, I'm just kidding. Keith came up to me and told me that he would honor the contract or the agreement that he had, absolutely, but he was not disappointed to see it go, because when you've got a show like this, it takes over a major part of your life.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
You can never put it aside. You always have to be prepared. And, you know, one of the kind of strange things, going to bed at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, for me, I had to go to bed earlier, I guess, than Keith did because he came on later. But to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning is so against my my history and my nature. I mean, I'm a person who always enjoyed staying up late reading or writing or whatever, a kind of a night owl. And to make that transition was really difficult. You know, it's just, I don't know. I'm not saying that I don't enjoy doing the show, but it used to be fun to stay up late, you know?
Yeah, well, same. I'm a morning person, love listening early, loved your show, enjoyed Keith, and would love to hear him on earlier with you. So maybe something can be worked out.
He's always invited to drop in. I had asked him if he wanted to come on the show Friday to do a send-off, and he told me that he would, and they didn't show up. I would regularly invite Keith to come on the show, and for whatever reason, it might have been the, you know, I don't know. I mean, it might have been the show itself that he didn't feel like he could spread his wings.
Well, yeah. I mean, most of the people listening are pretty conservative people.
I don't know. We have a lot of Democrats listening, Kathy, to this show, believe it or not. There's a lot of Democrats that listen to this show. I've had people tell me that
just to keep an eye on you, just to see what you're saying and who you're going after. The reason they listen is to keep an eye on you, Kelly.
What is this, American Sniper, Las Cruces style? I mean... Getting stuck into the media cycle is good. This is the only place in town where someone who is of a conservative orientation could come on and would know that they would be allowed to speak. But I don't ever try to if somebody has something to say, you could be the most wild liberal in history. You could come on the show. I'm not going to interrupt anybody. I'm not going to diss anybody. If they come on the show, I'm going to give them respect and let them say their piece, you know.
Right, it's just the listeners that'll slam everybody for the next hour after they make some liberal statement, but that's okay. You know, I like that. The whole reason I listen to your show is to get the conservative point of view, to hear what the conservatives out there are saying about Eric Holder being so rotten and all that. So, it's interesting to get another perspective, and I enjoyed Keith, and I enjoy your show.
Well, I appreciate
so hopefully
it, Kathy.
You can
all right, so
bring him on.
Feel free to call in and let us know if we need to cover anything, and I'd be more than happy to try to. I mean, I'm always open to a good story, a good topic, especially local, because.
Okay, well, then my A number one priority would be bring back the red light cameras.
What?
Maybe not my number one priority.
Why?
But, you know, you catch all these criminals because. There's cameras all over the place, and yet for some reason, a red light camera that catches somebody breaking the law, going through a red light, is somehow hurting it's unfair to be caught in a camera going through a red light.
Kathy, do you want to live in a police state?
No, I don't. I feel like we're heading there now, but...
I
think you have more of a chance of not having... of being falsely accused of running a red light by a police officer than you do by a camera. A police officer will say, I saw her, she went through, I'm giving her a ticket, and I don't have to prove it. I saw it with my own eyes. A camera will take a picture and say, there she is, smiling as she goes through the red light.
Here is one of those issues that people who haven't, you know, are just kind of going off their gut, like yourself, are so mistaken about. The red light cameras actually affect what's that stuff called? It's a quantum physics. Just by observing something, you change it. The red light camera comes in. The red light camera actually, the people that run the cameras actually affect the amount of time that is given on a yellow light. They have to decrease the time for the yellow lights so that they can catch more people, so it can justify the red camera company. And they have done studies. These red light cameras don't make anything safer. They don't.
Well, I don't see this town being any safer. I got up one morning and thought, I just count the number of people running red lights at major intersections, or just intersections I was going through. It's astounding. I mean, they laugh as they're going through. They, you know, it's my turn on a
They laugh.
And they just laugh as they go through, kind of like,
wait.
What are you going to do about it? Three of them in a row going through while I'm waiting with my Green Arrow. I get some kind of satisfaction knowing that each one of those little people are going to owe the city $80. And, you know, the city could use the money. And it would give me great satisfaction to have them have tickets as they laugh as they go through the light. So, you know, I don't know. I don't see a police officer sitting there giving tickets anywhere for those lights. And it happens daily. It's ridiculous. This town is crazy on red light runners.
Kathy,
and yet,
why don't you go down with your little video camera every day at the worst corner and videotape the people and then send the evidence into the police department?
They won't do anything. They won't do anything, Kelly. Come on. I mean, that was a great stream of revenue for the city. It caught people doing what they shouldn't be doing, which is going through red lights.
Okay, Kathy, let me ask you something. Why don't we put a GPS tracker on all vehicles and have it?
They got them.
Listen.
They got them.
Hold on a second. Send that information over to a satellite or some thing in town that picks it up, and every person who breaks the law, everybody who doesn't do a full stop at a light or a stop sign, every person who is speeding, we can catch all of these so-called criminals, as you refer to them, and ticket them, and we can become a wealthy city just based on that.
Well, we don't have to take it to that extreme, Kelly. We could just start with the red lights at major intersections. That is, you know, what is so bad about, you catch bank robbers, you catch kidnappers on video, you catch lots of things going on video, but for some reason, everybody thinks catching a red light runner on camera is somehow unfair. Why? It's not unfair to catch the bank robbers, the kidnappers, the people breaking into houses, but to catch a red light runner is somehow unfair to that
person. I have a response to you. The red light cameras themselves cut down the amount of time that they put on these yellow lights, and they make it unsafer. They don't make it safer. It is a way to gouge the citizen. We've got another call. Was there anything else?
No, I'm sure I want to hear this other call.
Right.
Have a nice day.
Thank you, too. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Pedro.
Pedro, yes. What's on your mind?
Well, I thought I'd cut that last call short.
Well,
I won't even dignify it with a response.
It was
the
too long
light
to
camera issue.
Pedro, it was too long to cut it short, but we always love Kathy's calls. What's your response to the red lights?
Get a clue, Kathy. The red light issue has been resolved. It is a sham pulled upon the residents of this fair city by this greedy company that was siphoning money off, and it's a false sense of security, and it's a total waste of everybody's effort to get involved in discussing these red lights again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's like, I don't know, it's like bringing back something else bad. You know, where the only place that I disagree with they don't have more observation of the police, which strangely enough is the roundabout. I've almost been broadsided in the roundabout. I've yelled at people going through the roundabout and said, you know, there's a yield sign there, and they scream back at me that no, there's not. That's a fast lane. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm sure I've had people ready to strangle me. I don't see what's so hard to understand about the roundabout. People, the cars cannot sit in the middle of the roundabout waiting and hoping for people to yield when they go through there. There's only room for a few cars. I mean, it's common sense.
The roundabouts they should be well understood by the people here in Las Cruces because they're a big thing in Mexico, and in Europe they're real big. It's the roundabouts, they're okay, but doesn't it seem to you, Kelly, like they're too small?
They are pretty small, and the ones in Europe, I mean, you could have hobos living in the middle of them and you wouldn't notice it.
Right.
You know, but maybe Kathy can do an instructional video on YouTube for how to use a roundabout. Maybe that could kind of tap into some of this angst, this, you know, red light camera angst she's developed.
I agree with that. Hey, I wanted to ask you something else about, you know, the bridge that they're reconstructing there at Missouri?
Yeah.
Do you know if there are, if they're going to be putting on and off ramps there?
That's a great question. I haven't heard that discussed yet.
I don't think they are. I think they're just going to rebuild the bridge. But can you think of a greater opportunity to kind of help us out here is by getting some more on and off ramps onto I-25 and I-10?
Yeah, I've never understood that. I mean, I've never understood the way that Trevise and Telshore and that highway interact. It's so frustrating to get on to try to get on and off that thing.
Right, and then they built that really nice underpass there north of town on I-25. Really nice road, and they didn't put off ramps. I just don't get it.
I don't know. Maybe it's who knows who are making these kind of decisions. But we're running short on time. Anything else?
No, you're doing a good job. Those other guys that were on the air, they were doing all right. They just gave opposing views. People need to be more patient with what they're hearing on the radio.
Yeah.
And try to not get too fanatic on either side.
Well, I mean, I'm all for putting out both sides. I try to do that at some level, but I don't know why the host has to be liberal to get out both sides. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me. But
right. And, you know, I did see that he would shut people down if they called in with conservative views, either by, oh, got to go, or, you know, let's change the topic or something like that, which wasn't good.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing that you do know on this show, no matter what your opinion is, I'll let you give it a shot and see what people think of it. But we're coming up against our built-in, the baked-in-the-cake break here. Thanks for the call, Pedro, and have a good day. All right, folks, we'll take you out with a little bit of Jerry Reed here. By the way, if you have any topics that you want covered on the show, just let me know. If I can get them on, I will. And this is, in some ways, our only local, might be seem a little conservative, but our only way to communicate in the city is this show. I hate to say that, but here's a little Jerry Reed, and we'll be back after the break on the hour. Kelly O'Connell Show.
Just getting ready to roll them again. When I heard something behind me, I turned around and there was a big old cop. He said, "Hello, boy." Then he gave us a grin and said, "Look like I'm gonna have to haul y'all in and keep all that money for evidence." I said, "Well, son, when you hot, you hot." He said, "Yeah, when you hot, you hot. When you hot, you hot. You can play it all down at City Hall." I said, "Yeah, when you're hot, you're hot."
Kelly here. Good morning, 706. And there's some pretty interesting stories out there. I was thinking about this claim of Kathy that we don't have enough liberal coverage. I think that at some level there's too much liberal coverage. It's just not good. It's not good, or it's not great reporting. You know, one of the strange things about Fox News to me is that people love Fox News, the people that watch it. And the attacks against Fox News are almost completely of a personal nature. Faux news, fair and balanced, yeah, right. I mean, I hadn't seen a channel kind of come out and do a point counterpoint like the way that they did news. I thought it was kind of interesting, and yet still people complained about it. So here's something to think about. You've got these shoes like The View, and The View was like four or five women sitting around on the couch and talking about stuff, and a very successful show on in terms of ratings, but they only had one conservative on there. And I was wondering, you know, had you ever thought about why? And I think the reason is the same reason that I was talking to Kathy. This is just my perspective on this, but I think that in terms of exposure to air and sunlight and everything, we talk about how free speech is important because it gets ideas out there. It gets people's feelings and ideas out there, and then they're exposed to light and sunlight is a disinfectant. I think that at some level, the idea. I'm not talking about any personalities that are involved in the conservative movement, whoever you like or dislike, Bill O'Reilly or Rush Limbaugh, any of these people. This is not directly related to these people. Those people are, purveyors or spokespeople for those ideas. But the ideas themselves are stronger than liberal ideas. And the reason, which might sound outrageous to some people, because you would say, well, it's just a matter of opinion. Yes, it is a matter of opinion. And I know that the country is split between right and left to a certain extent. But I would say that, the foundation of this country was conservative. The reason we became so strong was the strength of conservatism. Those ideas were created over thousands of years and kind of drawn from these various sources, whereas liberalism as a set of propositions or ideas goes back to, this kind of post-French Revolution period in France and England and stuff. Ideas that are extremely enticing, obviously. There's a number of people that believe in them that are very, very intelligent people. But at the same time, I think you would say a lot of the broad goals of liberalism, socialism, whatever you want to call it, have not been achieved. And I would say that why not consider the fact of that for being the same reason that talk radio makes it as on conservative ideas, but really doesn't on the left ideas. It's because conservatism is intellectually viable. It is when you put it into practice. And I think leftism, well, according to a lot of people anyway, creates chaos. As the welfare system grows, the welfare state grows, it gets harder and harder to sustain all of these aspirations. We want to do this and that. We want to help the poor here. We want to service these disenfranchised people. The more the state gets involved in people's lives, the messier it is, the harder it is to sustain, and at some point it becomes impossible to pay for because less people are working to support more individuals that are not working. However you want to describe how that happened, whether it's by choice or not, so the upshot is that you've got a situation that does a lot better on paper than it does in practice. And we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Tony.
Tony, hey, thanks. Hope you're doing well this morning. And what's on your mind?
Well, yeah, your discussion on liberal and conservative news. Well, a liberal view is usually based on emotion and outrage.
Yeah.
I tried my best to watch some of these shows on MSNBC, and it's just so hard for me to take people not using logical explanations for anything. It's all about emotion and hate. And when you go to a channel like Fox News, they do always have, as much as I hate to see a Bob Becker or a Juan Williams, I'm so sick of hearing them, Carvel, at least you're allowing them to give their point of view. But the trouble is, when on those, even on Fox News, when these guys don't agree with what the host says or the conservative guest says, they start screaming and yelling and calling people names.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't work anymore.
Well, do you think that people are actually getting tired of that type of thing? I mean, what's when you say it doesn't work anymore? What are you stating?
Yeah. Exactly. People are walking away from the outrage. Even young people. I play softball in this town with young men in their 30s and 20s. And just this weekend, I was playing. We had a discussion. A gentleman saw my bumper stickers, which are anti-Obama, anti-liberal, and tells me, well, I voted for Obama. And I asked him why. He's he's a veteran, and I thanked him for his service, but he said he voted for Obama because he was black. And I told him that is the most asinine logic I have ever heard when picking a candidate for president. And then he admitted, yeah, I know, I screwed up.
Really? He admitted it. Okay, so that's my thing. It's like, I went to this very liberal school, and I liked going to this, you know, this University of Oregon is a super kind of, it's a hippie place, but I like being around ideas that I don't agree with. I kind of find it challenging, invigorating, and I like it when people call in and they don't agree with me. I like to hear why. I enjoy that, but it seems to me like a lot of liberals get very upset if they hear people saying things that they don't agree with, and I don't understand that.
Yeah, and I don't either. And I don't mind them getting upset, but give me an argument that you can stand by that makes sense. Give some facts. Use some logic. Get rid of the heartfelt, oh, poor people because of their race. Oh, poor this. And I don't want to hear that. I'm tired of hearing it. It doesn't work. I mean, even at this, where I was playing in softball, there were about six other young people there in their 20s. They loved my bumper stickers. They were so conservative that they were jumping all over this kid about his views. And the weird part is this young man has conservative views, but he still voted for a black man. That was basically it.
Well, I got to tell you, I got this friend Pete that called in, and he's from Florida. He and I are good friends, and he is one of the most stand-up guys. His dad worked at a president of a Christian college. But Pete has some liberal views, one of which is he is absolutely devoted to Obama to a degree that I cannot even fathom. No matter what Obama would do, he would justify it or come up with a reason for it. And just the other day after we got off the air, how did I do and everything? And I said, well, it was good. And he says, well, we need to debate Obama. And I said, listen, Obama is the topic of Obama is more stale than bagels off of Noah's Ark. Let's move on. And I mean, and it's like none of these people that are real fanatics, you can't even joke with them, you know? And I can't imagine looking at another human being with such a level. I don't even think Catholics look at the Pope that way, because I hear Catholics criticizing this Pope saying, what is this guy, a communist? Or, you know, even some popes will wring their hands and say privately, I don't really understand where this pope is coming from. You don't hear people who are devoted to the president talk like that.
No, it's scary that this man is almost like a messiah, or even more than a messiah.
Why? I don't understand it. I mean, he's just another human being.
Right, and it's... You know, with this young man I was talking to, I let him know I'm biracial, and Obama is as well. He played you people. Don't you understand? He understood that the race card was his way in. He was the least person probably in the history of our country to be president. And I also asked him, Hillary Clinton was running, well, was in the primaries. Why didn't you guys push for a female? Why? He had no answer, because he wanted to vote for the black guy. That was his answer. He felt it was time for a black president, not a qualified president. That makes me sick.
Yeah.
You would vote for someone just because he decided to be the black guy instead of the mulatto guy. Had he gone as one of my people, mulatto, I would have been so happy, because that's America. That's America.
Yeah.
People of different colors, ethnicities coming together.
You know what? I think one of the mistakes that the left has made in their approach to the president is, if the president had given speech after speech saying, let's forget about race, I think people would have been comforted by that, because I think as Americans, we do want, we aspire, whether we can do it or not all the time, we aspire to forget about race, because everybody wants to be treated fairly. Everybody wants to treat other people fairly for the most part. And so to keep bringing up race again is divisive.
It is. It is. And the only people who really bring up race are honestly agitators and the race baiters. When you talk to people, when I'm playing at the softball field, there are people of all races, ethnicities, genders. And you'll never hear, a negative word about race. People are calling each other, you know, hey, you gave me this, or, you know, and it's all in jest. It's just in jest.
Yeah.
No one's a victim by their race. Nobody out there is a victim.
And I think that's one of the great things about sports is that, you know, one of my dad's best friends was black when I was growing up, and we spent a lot of time at him and his wife's house. But how I got to know black people my own age was through sports, you know.
And you see, the thing out there in the field is, you know, we even have people of homosexuals, lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
We're all just hanging out together,
mm-hmm.
and nobody is even, I mean, it's not even an issue.
It's not an issue, yes. That's true. It doesn't need to be.
The only issue we talk about is trying to make it in this world.
Yeah.
You know, just trying to make a living, feed our children, and pay bills.
Especially in this county. I agree. Tony, great call. I got to go to a break. Anything else?
No, thanks for your time. And keep up the good work, man. Don't let those liberals get you down.
I'm not. I actually love liberal callers, and I don't know. I don't even really know where Kathy's coming on some of this stuff. Somebody criticized me for being enthusiastic about Frankie calling in. For whatever reason, maybe the way I'm wired, I love to hear the opposite side, and I like it when people call in. You know, preaching to the choir gets a little bit boring, you know?
It does. And one thing I love about liberals is they make me seem so much more intelligent than I really am.
That's pretty good. That's pretty
good.
We do. Thanks a lot, Tony. Folks, we do have a crisis on our hands in this country, and you see it in the difference between how even this fundamental, and this is one of the things that I find interesting about life is that you've got people, you could have two PhDs arguing about, you know, the right versus the wrong, the good way of doing things versus the bad thing. And at some point it comes down to it's either faith or philosophy or whatever. I find it fascinating that you could, I guess it's this kind of thing is like, you know, it's, there's this movement, I think it's in the left, but maybe it's across the board, where people are kind of advocating that there is this right way to see things and a wrong way. There's this good and the bad. And, you know, we all feel that way. But this thing with Elton John criticizing Dolce and Gabbana. Dolce and Gabbana are huge. They're this giant brand. And they said, you know, you don't break up the family this way. And I thought it was kind of an interesting debate. It could have been an interesting opportunity to talk about the pros and the cons of gay adoption, which is a huge issue in this country. Instead of having a debate over it, Elton John got infuriated. And he said that, you know, these guys, we've got to protest against them. We have to, you know, boycott them and everything. In other words, there's only one way to see the issue. And if you don't agree with that one way, then you're a bad person. You need to be boycotted. You need to be pushed out of society until you agree. How about seeing it a little bit differently? There's two arguments on both sides. There's the argument that says people have the freedom to marry who they want, and they have the freedom to have kids if they want, versus every child wants to know its natural mother or its father, and it's healthier to grow up in a house with the couple that brought you in together. So why not have that debate instead of pretending that you're an outrageous person if you disagree? We're way behind on the break, but here's a little bit of Jerry Reed, Eastbound and Down from Smokey and the Bandit. Great, great instrumental piece. We'll be back 523-1450 Kelly O'Connell Show. Listening to some of the great artists in the history of country music. We'll be right back at 722. And hold on just a second. I got it right here.
He's bound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time.
Good morning to you, 726. Talking about liberal versus conservative, I find it, I find it kind of invigorating to talk. I've got a sister who I'm very close to, probably the person that I'm closest to in my family since my mom passed away, who is a very liberal person. And she's liberal to the point where we never talk politics. And so I remember talking to her one time, and I had said to her, I'm going to, I didn't feel like I really understood the liberalism or the history of liberalism, and I thought it was kind of an interesting topic. So anyway, I did study it, and then I got down to, I got talking to her and everything, and I got to... on a level that I had never heard anybody talk about it before. And I was kind of amazed by the history of liberalism. And just because I'm mentioning it, just to tell you here, there's a couple of things in the history of liberalism that are kind of fascinating. One of which is this: people who really get into the topic get into the Gnostics, and the Gnostics were this ancient band of people that were living in the Middle East, and they were influenced by Judaism and Christianity on the one hand, on the other hand, by Eastern kind of, you know, Hindu or those type of beliefs. Anyway, they believed in salvation through knowledge. And people will say that there's a strong element of this in the today in liberalism. That's one of the strands. There's another strand, this guy by the name of Joachim of Flora, who was a priest who tried to interpret the Book of Revelation. This is in the 12th century. He came up with this three-part... I'm talking about this, wondering if this is interesting to people, but he comes up with this three-part division of history: the time of the Father, the time of the Son, and the time of the Holy Spirit. And he basically takes the Catholic model, and he takes God out of it. He puts paradise down on earth, and that becomes the model, believe it or not, later when these people that are writing about socialism and stuff, it becomes the model. So the interesting thing about liberalism is you've got, on the right, you have the people on the right. There's neocons and theocons. Patty had called up before and asked about that. Theocon, or a neocon, is a religious conservative. Theocon is a religious conservative theology, you know. And then neocon are the people that are not especially religious. They might be agnostic, libertarian, atheist, or whatever, but they're people who believe in the conservative movement from that angle. Those are the people on the right. But you have a strong religious element in a lot of this stuff. On the left, you've also got a liberal approach to this stuff, because it is basically, without getting too deep into it, it's like liberalism is kind of like a church without a God in it, and the way that they problem solve and everything, this love of bureaucracy, the idea that the state has this basically godlike duty and authority. And so it's almost, it's very strange. Once you study it, so many things become obvious, that it is a battle, if you want to put it this one way. It's kind of a battle between Christianity and its offspring, the political theories that Christianity developed over the centuries of Europe being developed, political and such, and on the one hand, on the other hand, kind of a Christian cult that pulls God out of the picture and puts the state in there instead. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's what I came up with from having studied this stuff. All right, let's don't want to get too deep in the weeds here. Here is Jerry Reed, a little more Eastbound and Down. Just, I love this tune. 523-1450 to call in at 731. We'll take a little break here and be right back. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM 1450.
Eastbound and Down, load it up and truck it. We're going to do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just like your bandit run.
Morning, it's Kelly here, 737, flying the friendly skies, and was just talking about kind of the history of liberalism. It's something that I had never even heard of before. I'd never heard of this development. It's like anything else, I guess, when you go back and do the history of something that is big or notable, especially ideas, then there's usually a long history of some kind. But I did, when I was working in Miami as a researcher, I had ended up writing an article on the history of charity. And the guy that I was writing for was actually in China the whole time. So I was kind of, just researching this article and everything. What I discovered was that in the ancient world, there was no charity as we understand it, outside of the Bible believers, and I thought that was kind of interesting. And then as the Christian church developed in Rome, they started developing charity and hospitals and everything, but or at least the care of the sick. I can't remember when the first hospital was. I have to go back and take a look at that. But anyway, this element of charity, which the Jews call tzedakah, I also did an article on the history of Jewish charity. I was going to do a book, basically. And anyway, there is, in my mind, nothing more strategic or nothing more important, nothing more representing the heart of liberalism more than charity, right? And it's funny, it's interesting that in the history of the world, the idea does not seem to occur to anybody before the Jews and the Christians come along. And then it is their application of charity that is later taken by liberalism and applied. And I therefore find it so amusing when I hear people saying that, you know, conservatives, Republicans, whatever, don't care about the poor. I mean, I find that the height of comedy, you know, that, if it wasn't for the welfare state, there would be masses of people out there starving, you know. Anyway, okay, so let me play a little bit. I had promised you this little clip of John Voight here talking about Obama. I just wonder what you think of this whole thing, what you think of the president's relationship to the Middle East, if you can even understand it, his interactions with Bibi Netanyahu, his apparent, it came out a few weeks ago that he was told them, supposedly warned Israel if they tried to bomb the nuclear facility in Iran, that he would have them shot down, which I found to be very bizarre. But anyway, in our relationship with Iran and everything, here's John Voight again.
He's an Oscar-winning actor. He's just been nominated for an Emmy for his role as Mickey Donovan in the award-winning Showtime series, Ray Donovan. But he's got much bigger things on his mind. He's really concerned about the direction that our nation is headed. Please welcome back to the show, John Voight. Hello, John.
Hello,
Governor. Great having you back.
Wonderful to see you, Governor.
I think this is the chapter of the John Voight fan club that we've assembled here today. They love you here, but you know what? They love you all over America. You've been one of the most outspoken and provocative voices to speak truth to the American people. And I remember when you were here 4 years ago, John, you spoke eloquently boldly, in fact, shockingly so. And you said some things that you felt were going to happen. And I'm sad to say that everything you predicted has in fact become true. And it was some bold assertions about where we were headed as a country and this administration. And you and I have talked on many occasions since. You've also come today with a message for the American people.
Yes, it's wonderful to be here with you. I saw you outside. You're very photogenic.
They already love you, John. You don't even have to bottle them up.
Thanks, Governor, for having the confidence in me to let me address the American people at this crucial time in American history. There's so much to say, so please forgive me if I read from my notes. And you may feel as I go that you want to comment, you know, every once in a while. Just jump in as if it was your show.
Okay. That's a very generous of you. I appreciate it.
I'm here because of my heavy heart that a great man, Dinesh D'Souza, a patriotic man, more patriotic than anyone I can think of at this moment, present company excepted.
He's going to go on and talk about Dinesh D'Souza, who had put the film together of this film that was in the theaters a few months ago. He was prosecuted and he was punished for getting involved in the finance laws and everything. And so they had threatened him with jail and everything, Dinesh D'Souza. But anyway, John Voight has been a huge critic of this administration idea that we are at kind of a crossroads here. Here's what I find interesting. I just want to throw this out to you. There is this theocon and neocon. The theocons, to a large extent in America, believe that Israel today is the Israel of the Bible, of the ancient world. This causes them to have an extremely maternal and a very defensive and kind of nurturing relationship with Israel. Anything that threatens Israel, they're upset about. Now, there are also theocons, many of which are Jewish people, people on the right who are Jewish, who are defensive of Israel for maybe more practical reasons, you might say, for existential reasons. They don't want the Jews threatened or attacked or killed. Got that on the right. Then on the left, you have a lot of people who identify with the Palestinians or with the Arab cause, the Muslim cause against the Jews, and they want America to stop investing so much in the defensive capabilities of Israel. They would like us to stop meddling in the Middle East and let these people work it out on their own. And they definitely agree with the president. They don't want Benjamin Netanyahu to be babied. And so in the midst of this, Obama is in this extraordinary and unprecedented, and according to John Bolton, the former UN secretary, totally failed negotiation with Iran. There's this tension that's in America that is playing out in the Middle East. I kind of find it fascinating. I want to see what side you're in. 523-1450. It is 7:46. We're going to come back and talk about this. Jerry Reed again, Eastbound and Down. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 to call in. Kelly here. There's a couple of things that we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call of the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes, Thomas.
Thomas, thank you for the call, and what's on your mind?
Well, you're mentioning Israel a minute ago and how some people view Israel, modern day Israel, that is. I'm interested if maybe some of your callers could call in who view it that way, that the Israel today is the Israel of the Bible, when in fact Paul in the letter to the Romans chapter 2 says that a person is not a Jew who is one not outwardly but inwardly, and so he must there must be some spiritual quality that, that true Israel possesses, and that would certainly not simply be ethnic or national or something of that sort.
All right, so, well, let me ask you this. You're obviously familiar with the Bible. Who is the modern Israel? Are they the same thing as the Bible talks about?
I would suggest that it's not anything of ethnicity, but rather something inward and spiritual. That's the gist of chapter 2 of Paul's letter to the Roman church. Very clearly, he says, one is not a Jew who is one outwardly, but inwardly. And so he even goes as far as to talk about circumcision and not being any of any consequence. And so nothing outwardly would suggest that the real Israel or true Israelite is one that may be Jewish or live in Palestine or anything of that sort.
On the alternative, though, Jesus comes out of the line of David. I mean, the ethnic aspect of the Jews can't be just set aside, can it?
No, I wouldn't suggest that you have to dismiss it completely, but I think the ultimate reality of what a Jew is in the biblical sense, I would use the word spiritual, would be inward instead of outward. And so you could be a Jew never having been to the Middle East. You could be Jewish in the most spiritual, truest sense of the word, biblical sense of the word, and you know, be of any ethnicity.
All right, so let's connect the finish the circle here. Aren't you almost suggesting that the modern Christians are Jews in a sense? And hold on one second. This is Kelly. I'll be right back. Aren't you suggesting that modern Christians are Jews in the way you're talking about?
I would say that a person who fits the biblical category would be considered Jew for the argument's sake. Yes.
Now, okay, so what is that? How does that impact your idea of how we are interacting with Israel?
I think that the extreme right, conservative right in America, who insists that we always stand by Israel almost with a blind eye, is failing to recognize what a true Israelite is. And so it's superfluous to try to defend Israel at every corner when, in fact, Israel as a nation is not the true Israelite.
Interesting theory. Okay, got another caller here. Anything else, Tom?
Now let's see what your callers have to say. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. All right, folks, this is kind of an interesting issue. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show, who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We've opened a can of worms here. Go ahead.
Briefly, Kelly, I think your caller's right, the last caller. You know, when God said to Abraham, I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee, God was referring to Abraham's seed, who Paul identifies as Christians, and that's the Israel of God. And, you know, and it said that, they'd be like the grains of the sand, and they'd be dispersed throughout all nations.
Yeah. Mike, can I ask a question?
Briefly.
Thank you. Do you feed your dogs unleavened bread?
Yeah. Kelly, you have 10 seconds to Hey, no, Kelly, the thing I was going to say is this,
hold on,
who's
one
this
second,
guy
Mike.
Get?
Hold on. This is Kelly. I'll be right back. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say this, this guy is, Angelo Jolie's father, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, he's an Academy Award winning actor. He's still very active. He's kind of a legend in Hollywood, but he had some sort of a spiritual transformation, and you know, he's a good advocate for this side of the story. But should we be defending Israel, Mike? Yes or no? I got another call.
Well, I think for political reasons, yeah. I mean, it's strategically important for us to have to have it there, and but I believe that the what was I going to say?
Briefly.
I just think that a lot
seconds.
Of these people that say that are Christian Zionists, You'll be blessed if you bless Israel. It sounds like something from John Hagee.
It may be. Let's talk about this tomorrow, okay? Thanks a lot, Mike. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Antonio.
Antonio. Okay, we're ready for the real story here.
Oh, this is just my thought, the way I see the Bible, and I believe there's a lot of replacement theology. We need to be careful because...
Could you explain what that term means?
Well, there's a lot of teachings that claim that the Jews aren't who they are and that the church is the new Israel. And if you believe in Yeshua, Jesus, we're all part of Israel. And the part where it talks about Abraham's seed, it's not plural. It's prophetic, referring to Yeshua. But Paul also did mention that the oracles of God are handed to the Jews. And then the prophecy that Moses, it was a tremendous prophecy that Moses spoke through the Holy Spirit, a blessing over Judah. He said that Judah would have the iron scepter till Shiloh comes back. And we know that Yeshua, Mashiach, hasn't come back. So that prophecy applies today that brother Judah has the iron scepter, meaning the Torah. So till Yeshua comes back, they're the keepers of God's word. And Paul didn't preach against that. He said they have the oracles of God. And what we have to do is humble ourselves and learn some of the things from the Jews. The Jews' eyes are veiled purposely by God, not to see, they see a Mashiach, but they don't see Yeshua. And that's God's doing because he opened the door for the world. But then the Christians' eyes are veiled to the Torah because they deny it. And Yeshua is the written word of God. And Yeshua is the living word of God. He's the word made flesh. He's both. So if you deny the written word of God, you're denying Yeshua. If you deny Yeshua, the word made flesh, you're denying him flat out. So we need to be careful, and that's the way I see the Bible. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just going to stand with Israel, pray with her, send my money there. We only order from the Jews, and they have my blessing, and I'm an American citizen, and I want my politicians to support her. Because we're under that blessing that God will bless those that bless her, curse those that curse her.
Interesting. And we just got about a minute left, but do you think we are on the verge of what the Bible had written, was written in there of the apocalypse, the end of times?
Yeah, I believe that the Bible says every nation will be at the gates of Jerusalem. We're seeing that now. As much as I dislike Obama, you know, he's part of God's plan. God allowed him to be there. And it hurts my heart that the people want to divide God's holy land, and God will have vengeance.
Interesting. Well, we got to continue this topic. It's interesting how this is deeply affecting U.S. policy even today.
Yes.
Thanks. And
we love you, Kelly. Keep up the good work and forward.
Thanks a lot, Antonio. Have a great day. All right, folks, got about a minute left here. New York Police Department cop who sifted through 10 tons of 9/11 debris says he saw a ghost trying to help while searching for clues to identify victims from attack at Landvill. Book reveals Daily Mail is reporting this. And looking for the title of the book, but they said it was a black lady who was dressed in a white outfit, and she was offering sandwiches to the rescuers or to the people that were working. And other people, another guy had mentioned this to the New York Police Department, Sergeant Frank Mara, who's now retired, who wrote this book, but he said he heard somebody else mention seeing this lady, and it was only then that he recalled seeing her as well. And he said, it hit me like a ton of bricks. It just reminds me that I remembered seeing her. The interesting thing is I had just reported on this third person where they were people in extreme crisis a lot of times see a third person that's kind of guiding them. So I was reminded of that. Let's take you out here with Jerry Reed, Eastbound and Down. Kelly O'Connell, thanks for listening to the show. I think Keith is out of here, so it's corporate radio next. Have a great day. Ciao.
We gonna do what's
they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound up, watch your bandit run. Old Smokey has got them ears on. He's hot on your trail. He's gonna rest till you're in jail. So you got to dodge him, you've got to duck him. You gotta keep that diesel trucking. Just put that hammer down and give it hell. Eastbound.